Welcome back to the Football Fitness Federation podcast. This is episode 289. This episode is with Song Mi Kim. Song is the athletic performance coach at Washington Spirit. It was great to have her on the podcast. We spoke about a lot of the research that Song is doing and has previously done around understanding maximal intensity periods. We spoke how that relates to training prescription, the physical, physiological, technical, and tactical perspectives, utilizing small-sided games, and that was linked to her PhD. And then we also spoke about submaximal testing for monitoring fitness changes as well. So plenty to take away from this episode. So I hope you enjoy it. Just before we jump into the episode, just want to make you aware of a free webinar we've got coming up in conjunction with Hawking Dynamics. That's on the 8th of May from 2 till 5pm. We're going to be running a webinar based around force and football. And we've got speakers including football market manager at Hawking Dynamics, James Collins. We've got director of education and research at Hawking Dynamics, John McMahon, as well as director of sports performance and science at Sporting Kansas City, Joey Harty, who's recently on the podcast, alongside head strength and conditioning coach at Sporting Kansas City, Alfonso Thompson. So it's a free webinar. I'm going to post a link to the webinar to sign up in the show notes. So make sure you go and check it out. And that webinar is on the 8th of May from 2 till 5pm. So hopefully you can join us. Finally, a big thank you to our sponsors, The Good Prep. The Good Prep is a meal prep delivery service that provides fresh, ready-to-eat, chef-cooked meals straight to your door. They offer meal plans tailored to your personal goals, current activity level, and schedule. The Good Prep works closely with elite-level athletes and corporates to develop meal solutions that meet the ever-changing demands of performance and training. Their clients include Brighton Hove Albion, the PGMOL, Commonwealth Teams, Gymshark, and many more. Their meals are full of all the nutrients you need to keep you in peak performance so you can achieve every goal you set. Plus, you can reclaim your time, eat better, move more, and reduce food waste too. Their meal plans are designed to guide you through your journey to a healthier you. Take the guesswork out of healthy eating and discover the power of nutrition at thegoodprep.com and make sure you use the code FOOTBALL15 for 15% off your first order. This podcast is brought to you by Hytro, the number one BFR brand in pro sport, helping teams and athletes improve performance and recover faster with their blood flow restriction wearables. Built for sport and proven by science, check out Hytro.com to find out more. Also, a huge thank you to the world's leading VR sports trainer, that is Rezl. Massive thank you to the guys at Rezl for sponsoring the podcast. And big congratulations on their recent announcement of their partnership with the Premier League as well, doing some brilliant work over at Rezl. So let's get into episode 289 with Song Mi Kim.
Rezl is the world's number one virtual reality sports trainer. Whatever your team, your sport, your ability, improve your game and train like a pro. Rezl. Reactions, performance, accuracy, stamina, resilience. Train at home in the Rezl Sports and Fitness VR Training Arena. Search Rezl, R-E-Z-Z-I-L. Harder, stronger, smarter. The world's number one virtual reality sports trainer. Available now on MetaQuest.
Welcome back to the Football Fitness Federation podcast. This is episode 289. Welcome to the podcast, Song Mi Kim. How are we doing?
Oh my God, thanks, Ben. How are you doing, mate?
I'm very good, thank you. Song, you've come with high. We've had a lot of people requesting to get you on the podcast. So if you're reaching out saying you need to get Song on, we've obviously come across each other at a few events. So it's great to finally get you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's also good for me to be on this podcast. I really enjoyed your podcast overall.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Well, I know you've had a few different roles and positions, and obviously people might know you from where you're at currently, which we'll get into in a second. But do you want to just kick us off with your career, where you've been and what you're doing now?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So we are going back to like 2014 or some time. So I did my undergrads back in South Korea in sports medicine. So I originally started my career in pro sports as a medical staff, which was athletic trainer in South Korea. It's pretty similar to what physios do in the UK. And I worked for 3 years at a private sports rehab clinic and also worked for the Korean FA with the women's national team, different squads. But then I decided to switch my career towards more performance side, then decided to come to England in 2018 for doing the master's in strength and conditioning at Liverpool John Moores University. And I did an internship at Crewe Alexandra first team. We were at League Two back then. And actually it was my first sports science or like strength and conditioning experience in like England men's football. And I know it sounds pretty nerdy doing another master's after the master's, but then at the back end of that year, I found this research master's project in Leeds United, mainly working with under-18s. And the research was around the peak demand, but then I worked for under-18s academy like full-time. So I did 1 year there. And then after that, I found this PhD opportunity at Huddersfield, again, like doing the research and also work as full-time practitioner with under-18s and B-team squad. And then the research was expanded from my MRES, like about the maximum intensity periods. So the first one is more around the like physical demands, like physical side. But then this one is not only the physical, but also physiological, and then also technical and tactical characteristics during this maximum intensity period. And then comparing those to the small-sided games. And then nearly back end of my PhD at time at Huddersfield, I got the job in Washington Spirit in NWSL in America. So now I'm in United States as an athletic performance coach for the Washington Spirit.
Awesome. Just, you talked there about the decision that you made early on to go more from down the medical route to the performance side. What was the decision around that? What led to that change of path?
So I really like to help the players, like individual level, to you know rehab and recover from the injury. But then from those experience, I saw the a lot of injuries coming from the on-pitch training load or on-pitch the training. So then I was thinking, well, if I could help them to not to get injured or reduce the risk of injury, actually that would be more like helpful for them. So then I can also proactively engage in their process and help them develop like strengths, power, speed, and also tactical sides to help the training design. And then England was obviously the football country and also really famous for sports science and strength and conditioning. So I decided to go to the UK.
Brilliant. I know you've come across a lot of top coaches throughout the different roles that you've been in as well, especially where you are right now, which you've just been talking about before we started recording. How's the sort of transition in the career going over to the States been for you?
Well, I still cannot really get used to call this sport soccer. It's not even soccer, it's like soccer. I don't even know. Sometimes when I say football, they just look at me in a weird face and then, oh, are you talking about American football or soccer? But apart from that, it is all good. So obviously this transition is also from men's side to women's. So obviously when I was in Korea, then I worked with female athletes with the FA, but my last 5 years experience with predominantly the male, not only players, the staff, but then here I'm working with the female players. They're also different. And also how they view the importance of like teamwork and strength and conditioning is slightly different to the UK, in my opinion, because, you know, in States, American football is big and also college sports is big. Gym is kind of bigger culture in there than England, which is also like enjoyable for us. Yeah. And then also we have a big department with Don Scott at Washington Spirit, which is also another, you know, good career like experience for me to go through.
Yeah, like I say, some brilliant practitioners to learn from, because I know there's the likes of Adam Forrest out there as well. And you mentioned about Luke Jenkinson as well, being in the same facility too.
Yeah, so when I came to the States, I didn't expect to see a lot of English people. But obviously, I know Don Scott is with us, Kirsty and Adam, who are also. But then when I saw the DC United side, because we share the same training facility, the Luke Jenkinson, who was in like England Derby and different places. I said, all right, what a small word.
Yeah, crazy, crazy. Song, you mentioned about some of your research and some of the areas that you've been looking at in terms of your research. So let's dive into that now. First of all, around these maximal intensity periods. So can you give us a little bit of understanding in terms of what you mean by maximal intensity periods? And then also we'll go into how that then relates to training prescription, how that impacts what we do.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So in the research, like there are a lot of research around this area. So some people call it like peak demands or the worst case scenario. And like for me, we decided to call it the maximal intensity periods. So it's basically to capture the hardest moments of the game between like from whatever duration you want to. So from 1 minute to 10 minutes, for example, you want to capture the highest intensity players going through given duration. For example, if you look at the, for example, meters per minute from the 45 minute half, it'll be pretty low because in football, the intensity changes like really, really often. So some moments you will have intense moments, you go up and down, a lot of running, counter-attacking, but there were some moments that you kind of calm down, possess the ball, pass around. So it's difficult to understand the exact highest intensity players go through with a certain amount of time. So the idea of maximum intensity periods is using the rolling average, moving average across the 45 minutes so that you want to capture the highest intensity players go through, which can be done through different metrics, for example, meters per minute, which is average speed, or you can do it for high speed running, sprinting, acceleration, deceleration, and heart rate as well.
Yeah, brilliant. And in terms of the fluctuation on when these periods occur, how much does that change from game to game?
Well, actually, there are quite high variability how it changes between different games. But then actually, when you look at the over a 45-minute intensity, which previously used to prescribe or using as a reference for training intensity, it's much, much higher when you look at the shorter periods. So then, for example, if you want to do the small-sided game for like 3 minutes or 4 minutes or even 5 minutes, 8 minutes, what actually you do there should be harder than what players do the 45 minutes if you look at the actual intensity of it. And then this whole idea was actually coming from the Murderball of Bielsa's training methodology. I know George mentioned in the previous podcast that was main part of the training. And when you know someone says, oh, we do 5 blocks of 5 minute training, small-sided game, it might not sound really hard, but it depends on how you do it. So yeah. Then the idea is coming from there. So replicating the hardest moments of the game within the training. So then actually, we probably better prepare players better to be able to cope with those demands. So that's where I came from. And yeah, where were we? Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant, because we'll talk a little bit more around small-sided games in a second as well, because I know that's an area that we can go into. But just in terms of this training prescription off the back of it, so once we understand and we look into these periods, is there anything else in terms of how that is applied in the day-to-day, both on the pitch, but it also does it affect anything else?
It was mainly on the pitch to prescribe the intensity of small-sided games. So obviously these days the technology is so advanced, so you can do live training load prescription, also monitoring on the pitch. So for example, if you start the certain periods on the pitch, small-sided game, 3 minutes or 4 minutes, you can actually see the intensity of those drills. So what I did at Huddersfield was obviously my first study was understanding the external and internal maximal intensity of the match play, for example, 3 minutes. So then we got the number, reference number for, okay, average speed, this is what they do, the 3 minutes. So then when we actually do the small-sided games, that is the target we'd like to hit. So the obvious, the coaching staff, they would see the game differently. They were more focused on their tactical movement, either, you know, pressing, close down, or movement in behind. And then when actually the number is low, then actually we can really, really focus on the movement they make rather than tell them run. So that was one way we did it. So I went to the coach, okay, this could be harder than now because I want it to be harder. Then also he said he also wants to focus on pressing, for example, because we use the man marking within the academy. So then that actually also helped to improve the intensity. That's how we used it. So then the heart rate subsequently followed because the harder you work, the higher your heart rate is. And another interesting thing was the first study I found that the maximum intensity periods for average speed and average acceleration and deceleration, they are concurrently occurred with the heart rate maximum intensity periods within the first 30 minutes of the game. So basically, if you want to really, really maximize the heart rate loads, you really, really want to focus on and drive the intensity through both every speed and acceleration and deceleration. But then high speed running and sprinting occurred concurrently, but spreading out across the whole like 90 minute match. So if you want to really, really maximize the heart rate response, probably them two are not the main quality you'd like to chase within the small-sided game, for example.
Yeah, no, brilliant. I think you sort of underline the importance there of utilizing the coaches as well, because I know one thing you spoke about before was the technical and tactical side in terms of that perspective and that prescription in terms of small-sided games as well. But you just give a good example there in terms of the tactical side with the man marking that you mentioned, that's driving the intensity. Is there anything else that if people are listening thinking we use small sided games, but we're not quite getting to the intensities that we want to, is there anything else that you look at and you potentially add in?
For not like the my second study was looking at the technical and tactical characteristics happening during that 3 minute maximum intensity periods. But not surprisingly, obviously the passing and receiving was the most frequent technical actions for most of the players. And then in terms of when we are in possession, the move to receive or exploit the space was the most frequent tactical actions. And then when we are not in possession, for example, strikers do a lot of close down and pressing, but then defending players like centre-backs or full-backs, they did a lot of covering, which is also, if you press, then you have to cover back your teammates. So these are the actions happening a lot within this maximal intensity periods. So we can really emphasize those elements during the small-sided games. But I also know that like this is our training philosophy and this is our playing style and this is our coaching methodology. So within our circumstance, this worked really well because this was the actions that coaches wanted to happen within those hard moments. It won't be generalizable everywhere, but then still this gives you the idea of how to maximize your training intensity. Then also in the previous literature, they always linked the heart rate response is highly related to acceleration, deceleration, and change of direction and the technical actions. That's why, you know, your small-sided game formats would give higher heart rate response than the larger ones. And then another thing I noticed was, you know, the decisive actions like goals or shots or crosses, actually they don't really occur a lot during this maximal intensity period. But then also there is a lot of research saying the straight line sprinting or curved sprinting is actually related to the goal situations. So then what you'd like to focus on during this small-sided game would be more of those tactical actions and a lot of short and sharp movements rather than focusing on the goals or crossing and shots. That's kind of the overall kind of overview that I had from all this PhD process, that you actually could split the focus of the technical and tactical elements when you are designing like either small-sided games or more position-specific drills or more high-intensity action drills paired with these kind of decisive actions.
Now, that's really interesting. That ties in really nicely with the podcast we did it with Damien Harper and Gareth Sanford around this importance of especially decelerating, but also you talked about accelerating there as well. And it kind of makes sense, doesn't it, that the longer sprints, the curved sprints are coming at times where maybe players are trying to break into the space behind the back three, the back four, whatever it is, and having opportunities on goal. But then I suppose that's the interesting side of it, isn't it? This maximal intensity period is the short, sharp stuff where we need, that's where we need to dominate. So that's where the focus is for you, is it?
Yeah, it is. So the main idea behind of this PhD was, okay, so we tried to replicate the physical side, but then we don't really know anything about the physiological side. And also this is affected by what movement they do, because you can achieve the exactly same distance with two different ways. You can just simply run 50 meters, but then you can run 50 meters with like five different change of direction, which will cause a lot different. And then during the game, the players need to make the decisions. So like all these elements are affecting to what they do on the pitch. So I tried to consider all those aspects rather than focus on one number. And then when I connect with the technical staff, then actually we can come up with a better training design for the players, which like cover all of these elements.
Yeah, no, that's really important, isn't it? And just to tie into that song as well, we spoke about like the future of the game and this intensity, and the intensity obviously over time has just been increasing, which is where this reliance of Axel, D-cell is becoming heavier and heavier on the players, isn't it? So what, if any, changes would you be looking to make on your current program to take into account the future demands of a game? Does that make sense?
Yes and no. Let me to,
understand. Yeah, so it. No, I just mean it in terms of it, if we carry on increasing at the intensity that the games have, you've broken down everything in terms of the prescription that you're making with players with small-sided games and these maximal intensity periods. But if that keeps on increasing, how would training change? Would it change? Or would we keep doing the same thing and just keep trying to drive that intensity?
Well, we all know the likes for last 10, 20 years, the game demands increased, and then also training demands would have increased, I'd guess. So we probably need to adjust our approach to training, because otherwise we don't prepare players to the maximum level. So then actually, when I looked at our data from this study, that I found the physiological response of basically the heart rate during the maximum intensity periods in the game was higher than what actually we do in the game. What we do in the small-sided game. So that's where I go back again. Right, so if the players experience these high heart rate loads during the game, and then we cannot really do it in this small-sided game, so then do we probably come up with a different solution for training? For example, if you do like 1v1 or 2v2, 3v3, which elicit a lot of acceleration and deceleration in, you know, within a short period of time, but like multiple actions. So actually, if the focus is Axel and D-cell, or if that demand is increasing, probably we can adjust our drill and then implement different training design or training drills rather than stick to the drills that we've done before. And also, as you're running and sprinting, we know a lot of transitions and counter-attacks occurring within this like modern football. It doesn't really matter which level it is. You can see a lot of, you know, changeovers within the game, and a player sprinting up and down for like three times in a row. So then also that's where the drills, which can prepare players for this element, which is slightly different to the Axel and D-cell, but this is more sprinting. But then underpinning all these, what we do in the gym, also what we do as an athletic development section on the pitch, this also underpins everything, because football session cannot give everything to the players that they need to perform as the best version of them. So then also gym program should be really, really detailed, and based on individualized needs, then where they are at in terms of like strength or different testing elements can help us to develop this individualized team program as well.
Yeah, that's a brilliant breakdown of it. No, I appreciate that. I know it's a little bit of looking into the future and not really knowing exactly what we're going to be dealing with, but it's really interesting, isn't it, in terms of this trend that we've seen. And if we carry on going the same way, like how things are going to develop, how we're going to need to develop, and what our players are going to look like in years to come as well. I'm keen to dive into that in a second, in terms of the gym work and the other work that the players do and how that's sort of periodized. Well, just before we do that, just going back to small-sided games, is there anything that you'd leave the listeners with in terms of periodizing small-sided games? I understand it's going to be contextual to your style of play and how your week works and all the rest of it, but just in terms of a bit of an idea, an insight into how you go about structuring those on a day-to-day basis. Can you give us any insight into that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So we're at Huddersfield, obviously the typical English academy, you'd have a game on Saturday and you have a day off on Sunday. And then we had the lads have education. So you have a training on Monday, Tuesday, and actually Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday was off. Friday was match day minus one. So we didn't really want to do a lot of intense work at match day plus two, which was Monday. So then our main physical training days were Tuesday and Wednesday. I know you could do so many different ways, and some people will think like Tuesday, Wednesday back to back is a bit too much, but then also you can go for like Tuesday, Thursday, but then, you know, some people not really prefer doing it a match day minus two. But also we need to consider the education, like schedule and administration side. So we only can do, you know, what we can do within the context, within the structure we have. So main physical days were Tuesday and Wednesday. And we call the Tuesday training session intensive and Wednesday session extensive. So then Tuesday is more focusing on small and tight areas. And then, as I said, the average acceleration and deceleration also occurred with the heart rate maximum intensity periods during the game. So a lot of our drills before we get to the small-sided game, we'll be really focusing on acceleration, deceleration, and small tight spaces. But then when we get to this small-sided game stage, we really, really drive a lot of short and sharp movement within a smaller pitch size. But then when you go to extensive day, we really focus on the, you know, bigger distance, high-speed running, sprinting. So then we start from sprint technique work with the lads, and then the drills would focus on some like biggest distance, and even passing pattern could be in a bigger distance. And then we build up all the way to the small-sided game. So then we do the small-sided game in a larger pitch. And then also our lads love to call it motorball because, you know, Bielsa used the motorball terminology. And then Thursday we would have a day off and they are in the education. And then Friday we do match day minus one. So yeah, we actually only have like 2 days opportunity to do the small-sided game. But that's where I think like training design is really, really a key to develop players, because you cannot train all the time at the higher intensity, especially when you have the game, and it would be harder upper level, because if you're in professional, that every game matters.
We have just uploaded a load of new content for our community members, including one of our most popular presentations so far from youth athlete consultant physiotherapist Angela Jackson. Angela presented on the management of lower back pain injuries in youth athletes. She covered about the different stages of growth, correctly identifying lumbar stress fractures, using age-appropriate language for diagnosis, and loads more as well. We've also put up a presentation by Barry Drust talking about where sports science as a whole, whether we're helping or harming players. There's also a presentation from Paul McGrath on applied sports science in the League of Ireland as well. And we've got loads of other content coming soon as well. So if you're not already a member, make sure you go and check it out by going to footballfitfed.com. Sign up there. It'll give you a 30-day free trial when you sign up. After that free trial, you become a full paid member of the community, and you also get invited into our members-only WhatsApp group, where we have weekly discussions on different topics in sports science and football fitness. And you can connect with all the other members that are in the community as well, scattered right around the world. So make sure you go and check it out, footballfitfed.com. Click the community tab and sign yourself up there. Here's part two of the podcast with Songmi Kim. And then what does that look like? So obviously that's like on the English model at the time at Huddersfield and possibly Leeds as well. How does that look different? Does it look different to now, what you're doing with Washington Spirit?
Well, yes and no, but obviously it's really all down to the head coach philosophy. So last year we had an English head coach And this year we have a Spanish head coach. But I think overall to have like two main physical days and then some of the lower days, like either you call it like technical recovery or like low day, I think it would be pretty similar. And a match day minus one would be obviously, you know, really focusing on reactive knees and short and sharp just to get them ready for the game. But I think in English Academy, we had 2 days off pretty much every week. But then when you are going into different training philosophy or like professional level, it might not be the case all the time.
Yeah, no, cool. And then, Son, can you expand on the gym work that gets done, how that fits and supplements the work that you're doing out on the pitch there that you've mentioned?
Oh, but actually, at the moment at Washington Spirit, I don't do a lot of like gym programming because I have another SNC coach. But then at Huddersfield, we did a lot of gym work because we had a big emphasis on the physical development of players because our recruitment strategy was slightly different to other clubs. And then within the academy, improving your physical qualities are a really, really key thing. So then we did like two upper body and two lower body every week, which I don't think is common everywhere. And then sometimes that we have the individualized physical profiling dashboard for each individual players from strengths, power, speed, and also aerobic, as if like all other clubs do. But then based on those profiling and also from like technical and tactical opinion from the coaches, we sit down and then we prioritize what these players need to focus on to have a better chance to be a professional footballer. So then those cases, we reduce their training sessions like 3 times per week. So like one is the game, one is sometimes match day minus on or intensive or extensive, or intensive extensive and a match day. And apart from those days, we really, really attack their gym work. It could be really, really strengths focus, or it could be hypertrophy, or it could be power based on what they really need to improve. So these were the things that we tried to, you know, develop the lads to be able to cope with the demands, because if your strengths is not the physical qualities, and that was one of the reasons why you were released previously. So we are there to help you, to give you the best chance to make your career.
Yeah, I think you underline there the difference between the development side and then getting to the first team, isn't it? Where it's more performance results driven. And that very much, I know you mentioned there about the program at Huddersfield and the likes of Paul Bauer and Luke Dobson, and they presented at our event, they broke all that down, didn't they, in terms of the work that the players were doing. And also I suppose how the program lent towards developing physically. There was very much a lean towards that within that period, wasn't it? And then until they got to first team, things changed a little bit. And I know Callum Adams then went into detail on how they programmed first team. But no, I think that's the interesting side of it, isn't it? The difference between, and you've had it with your career as well, haven't you? Where you focus more on development and more on performance now.
Yeah, it is. And then as you just covered about like what Paul, Luke and Callum did, actually Huddersfield had a really, really good relationship with the technical and performance staff. And we all kind of agreed on the importance of the physical development of the players. And I know that it's not the case for everywhere. And also, as you just said, first team and academy, they're all different. So actually it was really good experience for me to start from, you know, the first team at Crewe, which was at League Two, and then going into Leeds and Huddersfield. So, okay, academy, the focus can be this one. And now again with the first team. So it's again, I should approach differently than how I did, because that's what this team needs from me as well.
Yeah, it shows the context is important, doesn't it? And also, I was going to ask in your role now, so it sounds a lot more that you're more pitch-based. Is that fair to say?
Yes. So when I first joined, obviously due to my PhD work and also what I did at Huddersfield, because it was limited resources, so you'd like to do more like from your like hands-on. So then to be able to provide what I think the best, I really worked on the physical profiling dashboard and data side, and then all the reports to show the maximum intensity periods, whether our training matches to the match demand. So I brought a lot of, like, data side, but then also I really, really wanted to carry on the, you know, coaching side as well, because those two parts are key elements, understanding the data and show them, but also at the end of the day, we are the coach, so we should be able to coach. So after I joined here, we did a lot of athletic development, play with the players on the pitch, but also training session design. All those things are doing as a coach, not like a sports scientist. So I first joined as an applied sports scientist, and now we transitioned to the athletic development coach. So yeah, but I would still do say, like, it's more like 50-50 at this point.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. That's the sort of subtleties between roles, isn't it? Because I don't think there's many clubs where you're going to be in a real specialist role where you don't touch anything else. But at the same time, some clubs and opportunities, there is more of a focus on one side than the other. And you've mentioned there about different clubs, different roles, different levels. It all brings slightly different demands from that practitioner as well, doesn't it? And different skill sets as well.
For sure.
No, it's really interesting. We're going to talk about as well, we mentioned when we were agreeing on some topics around testing and monitoring. So do you want to cover some of the work that you're doing in terms of monitoring fitness changes with the players?
Yeah. So the SubMax fitness testing actually is becoming more and more, like, popular within, like, this industry, I think. So especially now I'm in the first team squad again after when I was at the crew first team. So with the first team, it is really important to monitor their fitness changes across the squads, because you probably have 20 plus players, but then only 10 of you is going to play significant minutes over the weekend. And then, but you still need to make sure that the other 10 or however many you have, we want them to be on the same page in terms of the fitness, because at the end of the day, head coach turn around and you probably need this player to be able to perform 90 minutes this week. So the first time I got interested in this was when I was a crew with Liam Anderson. And then, you know, first few weeks of preseason, pretty much they do all same thing. But then when it gets closer to the beginning of the season, that you can see the starters playing more minutes and then non-starters having post-match conditioning or some compensation training, which we try to give the best training for them, but it doesn't mean that they get exactly same training similar as the starting players. And then especially League One or League Two, you're going into the back-to-back game periods. For example, for us, it was like 3 weeks back-to-back game periods, like Wednesday, Saturday. So then also doing a compensation training, you cannot really do like 90-minute training, for example, because you will never know that whether they would be needed for, you know, Saturday game or Wednesday game. So we started just sub-maximum running at the part of the warm-up at the beginning, like just 4 minute running. So then actually you can track their heart rate response for like 30 seconds. And then if you do it like every week, and you can see the tendency of their fitness changes across the timeline. And then, for example, if you do it in pre-season, that let's say 6 or 8 weeks periods, so then you should be able to see the downwards trending, because as you do the in pre-season training, players would get fitter, that you'd hope so, or you'd aim so. So then by the end of that pre-season period, the first in-season week, so you can use that as a baseline. So that, for example, like I do 4 minute running, my heart rate would be like 80%, but I was starting from 90% in week one in preseason, and I'm trending down. So then if we do the same thing all the time, you can actually keep monitoring the fitness changes. And actually around this topic, the Shuson, they did a big review paper. I don't know whether I pronounce his name right or not, but then this paper provides a really good insight around this test and pros and cons on different protocols, and also which variables to monitor. But basically, they were saying like 3.5% change is a significant change. So then if your player was like 80%, but after 3 or 4 weeks, she or he didn't play more than 10, 15 minutes across that 4 weeks period. And if you see their trend is going up, then actually, or you think of, oh, this player needs some, you know, compensatory training on top of what she or he does, because you can clearly see the tendency of it. So of course, if you see a change of 3% after a week, you don't really interpret that as a fitness change, because you're also aware that the weather or their sleep, or for a female, plus even menstrual cycle, like everything could affect to it. So that's why for this submax testing, the key is doing it consistently across across the microcycle. So within that, you can have a good picture of where your players are at, how your training is, because it all, at the end of the day, it also tells us how kind of what our training provides, and actually do our training provide what we think we are providing. So that's kind of my idea behind doing the submax testing. So looking at monitoring the players' fitness changes, not only the starting players, but also fringe and the non-starting players.
Definitely. No, it's important that, isn't it, in terms of the repetition of monitoring throughout the season to get a window or a little peek into what's going on at different stages, like you mentioned there. How does that look within the training session? Can you give a little idea on where that fits, and then also how you actually run that with the players?
Yeah, for sure. So same as every other test, you'd like to be standardized. You want to have like solid process. So after a day off, for example, at the part of warm up, you can do this run. So then the paper suggested anywhere between 10 to 12 kilometers per hour, around 4 minutes, is the solid duration. So then, you know, that speed itself is like a jog. I think everyone can run it, but then, you know, you can't really run players and then just let them do it by themselves, because sometimes running at slow speed is hard for them. Because I recognize this when I did it with the Huddersfield boys, even though I'm running at the front and another staff is running at the behind, for them it's like just boring 4 minute running. So even though, you know, they understand why we do it, sometimes
they want to go.
Yeah, they want to go, but you've got to be with them just to keep the speed. So now just we do some generic warm up, you know, mobility, like ramp warm up, some dynamics and those things for like 8 minutes. And then you go into this 4 minute running block. And that's pretty much it. Just the aim is you want to be as consistent as possible within your protocol, like every week. And then also when you process the data, you want to be precise, like same duration every week.
How do you control that now, Song, in terms of the speed of the players are running? Because I can imagine that's going to be, if anyone's running this in training, it's going to be a challenge that a lot of people are going to face, isn't it? So what have been some lessons along the way for that?
Well, just I got fit ever since I came to the States. I can put it that way. Just talk with them and just, you know, tell them slow down or too slow, but normally calm down, just running with.
And you give them the understanding of that, because obviously they might just see it as a run where we're going from here, round and back. Are you explaining the whole process on why we're running at that speed to them?
Yeah, actually, that is the key thing. Whenever I do some interventions with the players, is always the most important thing is their buy-in. So yeah, always like explain why we do it, like what we do it for and how it can help you. So then players understand why we do it. But even then, sometimes they can be like, oh, I don't want to do it. But at the end of the day, just try to deliver the same message to the players. So then, you know, we can provide what they need, and also they can understand hopefully why we do it for them.
Definitely. You've talked a lot about obviously the research that you've done and how that's been applied within what you're doing currently as well. But I know with all research, as you start looking into things, there's always a list of things that you'll want to look into further. So can you give a little insight into that? Is there anything that you've sort of come across where you're like, oh, I'd love to do a bit more digging around this topic?
At the moment, the maximal intensity periods, obviously, I did MRES and PhD. I really like it. But then also it has some limitations around the variability. And also we all know the physical, physiological side, but then also technical side is quite difficult to do in applied setting because it's nature of really, really time consuming. But again, I still think there is a room to interpret all these findings and actually try to replicate those in a small-sided game in training. Because at the end of the day, all the research is to improve or to like informed to training design, not just to be set at the research. So that is one area I really like, and I'm just keep trying to focus on those and how we can implement these findings in practice, but with the communication with the technical staff, because I think that is a really, really key thing as a practitioner. And then another thing is this submax area, because a lot of research is really, really focusing on the physical sides of our data. But I think this physiological and internal response is a key thing for adaptation and also understanding individuals, how they respond to training. And then submax is a really, really great tool to help me understand where they are, but also it's objective data. So I can actually, well, probably I can just guess by my eyes, okay, she or he hasn't played much minutes and, you know, training load reduces. So probably he or she is not really fit, but this objective data also helps me. All right, this is where we are. Then when I have a conversation with the players or even the coaches, okay, this is what we see. So just we need to be on top of these players, develop, like maintain fitness or development of their fitness. So actually we can make them ready for you whenever you need. So yeah, I think these things are like my main kind of interest. But like after all these things, actually I came back to the point, like basic points, that the design of training is the key element. So research is really, really good and it can help us. But, you know, some people say research cannot win the game, but then actually the training is the key to make the difference. The within those process, the communication with the technical staff, I think that is really key. And then as a sports science practitioner or performance staff, we are much more closer to the data side, also science side. So understanding all this process, and then when we are with them, actually we can come up with the best possible kind of solution or best possible option for them, so we can get our squad really fit and also, you know, ready to get perform really well, 3 points, hopefully.
Yeah, brilliant. Just finally, Song, what about your evolution as a practitioner? We've spoke about the different roles you've been in, the different squads you've worked with, right up until the current role now. What's the sort of next stage for you in terms of attributes, skills, things that you're looking to develop as a practitioner now?
Oh, that's a tough question. Obviously, I started this career because I love football and I grew up watching Premier League, waking up at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. just to watch the game, mute, so my parents couldn't know what I do. So, yeah, that is one of the passion. But also, I think if I can help the team and the technical staff to get the best training process and then help the decision-making and periodize, I think that would be my main goal.
Awesome. Tough question. You handled it well there, Tom. just finishes off. We always say when we're finishing the podcast, in terms of if people have got questions, we've covered quite a few topics there, which I'm sure have got people thinking, especially around small-sided games and the maximal intensity periods. There might be a lot of questions people want answering or getting into your experience on that as well. Where would you direct people to go?
I think Twitter would be the best channel to get to me. So my Twitter account is my name, like Song Mi Kim, _.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I don't think there are many Song Mi Kims on Twitter, so it'd be easy to find it.
Brilliant. Not many working at Washington Spirit anyway, so they'll definitely find you.
That's all right, yeah.
Song, that's been brilliant. Thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's been great to catch up. I'm glad things are going well over there as well. So yeah, keep up the great work.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me as well. It was, you know, a pleasure to chat with you. And I hope all the best for you as well.
Thank you to Song for coming on. It was brilliant to speak to her and it was great to hear about all the work being done over at the club at Washington and the team that have been assembled over there as well. So brilliant, brilliant team and plenty of people for Song to learn off as well. So yeah, it was great to have her on the podcast. Go and give her a follow over on X or Twitter at SongMeKim_, and she's also over on LinkedIn as well. Takeaways on this one, I think something that I'm sure a lot of people are aware of, and we spoke about this before, is around the gym culture in the US. It was something that Song sort of pointed out around it being a bit more of the norm for players to be in the gym. Obviously, a bit of a blend from other American sports over there. That seems to be the norm. So that was something that came up quite early on in the podcast. And then this concept around maximal intensity periods, I thought was really interesting. The fact that it tied in really nicely with the episode that we did with Gareth Sanford and Damien Harper around the importance of deceleration, but also acceleration. And Song's work was highlighting the fact that these periods of a game was the periods that the accels and the decels were the highest, which shows the sort of demands that are going on to players as well. And linking that in again with that previous podcast that we spoke about the future demands, if we carry on going at this in this way, in this pattern, then the demands are going to go up and these maximum intensity periods essentially is going to put more demands on the players. So that can then impact and inform the training that we're doing off the pitch as well. So some really cool stuff from Song. And then the other thing was around the utilisation of small-sided games, manipulating the small-sided games to get the right demands or adaptations she wants out of it. And the fact that she works so closely with coaches to inform that as well. I thought that was a really great point. And obviously something that we speak around cohesive coaching and a cohesive team. And it's definitely something that she's highlighted there. So plenty to take away again on this one. Big thank you to Song for coming on, but thank you for listening as well. Just finally from me, if you've not left us a review, please leave us a 5-star over on iTunes with a short comment. And also over on Spotify, that is a really simple one. Just click the 5 stars for us. It definitely helps us out. And there's a few more people done it recently as well, which I really appreciate. And make sure to go and check out our sponsors doing some incredible work, Hytro, The Good Prep and Rezzle. Make sure you go and give them a follow over on social media and see what they're up to. They've got some great work going on. And we've got some great episodes coming up as well, so keep an eye out for those. So I really appreciate Song coming on. And make sure you keep an eye out for the next few guests. And I will speak to you again in episode 290.